Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome in. This is episode 5 of the Card Chronicle podcast, a special Saturday edition because we have what I think is the biggest game of the Louisville basketball season going down later tonight in Durham, North Carolina. Louisville taking on Duke on the road. College game days in town. It's a big opportunity for U of L basketball. So we wanted to go ahead and make sure that we got a pod out for this game. We're recording it Friday night. I'm here with Dumpster Dan Sennard. It's his official name now. It's what people are calling him. We're doing this Friday night late because we have kids, and it's really the only time that we get to ourselves anymore. Dan, how are you?
I'm good. I can't believe that's the nickname that's sticking, but I'll ride it out for now. But yeah, I'm absolutely, and I'm sure you're feeling the same way. It's Friday night, and I don't know how I'm going to sleep. I'm absolutely jacked for the game tomorrow. I agree. I think it's our biggest game of the season, and this is the reason we joined the ACC, is for these type of games, and I couldn't be more pumped for it.
Before we get into the minutia of Louisville versus Duke and have some fun with this whole thing, should say that as we sit here and talk, the Card Chronicle podcast is the number 34 sports podcast in America, according to Apple Charts. That's because all of you guys have given us, 5-star reviews. You've written nice stuff. It's all because of you guys. I know how the algorithm works. I know this isn't going to be a long-standing thing. I wouldn't expect us to be top 30 or top 40 long-term. But for right now, I think we can say, suck it first draft with Mel Kiper. You're below us. Suck it Buster Baseball Tonight with Buster Olney. Suck it. Suck it the Michael Kay Show. You're behind us. Suck it Mike Francesca. You're behind us. Suck at the Right Time with Bomani Jones. All of these podcasts, Dan, are worse than the Card Chronicle podcast. How does that feel?
It's surreal, to be honest. I'm going to have a hard time if we pass the Grilling with JR podcast. I saw that was floating up there, and I was like, man, I don't even want to pass good old JR. I hope he stays at his place. But no, the reviews that people are leaving and just the outpouring of support that, the podcast is getting has been absolutely awesome. So much appreciated.
I think the most surprising thing to me in all this is how many popular WWE podcasts there are. Like you mentioned, first of all, we are still, it just updated a little bit ago. We are still comfortably behind Grillin' JR. He's at 29. We're at 34. But we've been going back and forth with Stone Cold Steve Austin. He's back in front of us. He gave us the stunner. He's back at 32. But then there's like WWE After the Bell with Corey Graves. And I don't know any of these sites. I don't know a lot of these people. But the amount of people who responded to me when I posted earlier, like where we were on these charts, who were like, good, I hate this guy. He's no Jerry the King Lawler. He fucking sucks. I was like, okay. People are really into WWE podcasts. I know your brother's one of them, but I didn't know this was a big thing.
Yeah, my brother Colin got me on the Stone Cold podcast, and I'm not going to lie, there's some pretty good episodes in there. he does them down at the Broken Skull Ranch. Definitely, if you got time, listen to a couple of those if you want some good peak WWF stories from the late 90s. But yeah, it is pretty surreal how many wrestling podcasts are on there. I agree.
All right, let's talk a little Louisville Duke, and I think – we'll start here because you kind of, and you and I talked about this, I wasn't going to say off air, but off pod. We discussed the fact that you were on the last time we recorded pretty confident about Saturday's game. You said my reaction sort of jarred you.
I was like,
whoa.
You gave me like the, oh, and I was like, okay, well now I'm absolutely rattled. But I mean, I just think out of all years going into Cameron, I don't know how good this team is. They've lost at home to Stephen F. Austin. I do hate that they're coming off a loss to Clemson. That just absolutely sucks because you know they're going to come out like gangbusters, especially being at home, being a primetime game day game. But, you know, with not being very deep and kind of the depth that we might be able to throw at them, I think it's a good matchup for us. But, yeah, we can kind of get into that here in a second.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, looking around the internet and listening to some College Hoops podcasts or basically all day Friday, all of the five college basketball writers at Sports Illustrated picked Duke to win. All of the four college basketball writers at CBS picked Duke to win. Jordan Sperber, who does the Hoop Vision podcast and YouTube videos and runs that website, he's got Duke winning. I haven't seen a single person pick Louisville to beat Duke besides Dumpster Dan Sinard. And so you're like the only you're an expert now. The podcast is so big. You're the only person going out on a limb and taking the cards. What makes you, I mean, you kind of touched on it a little bit there earlier, but like what makes you supremely confident about Louisville's ability to go in there and get what would be, I think without question, its biggest win of the season?
I think even though I know we haven't played the most stellar competition the last two games, I think those two road wins and how we won them are going to be pretty big for our confidence. And the fact that we've had people step up at the end of games, you know, obviously going against Coach K, he's one of the, even though I despise him a lot of the time, he's a hell of a coach. And one of the things and that's probably going to worry me most about this game is our other three losses. It seemed like, I don't know so much the Florida State game, but especially Texas Tech and Kentucky, their key was they're going to take away the three ball and let somebody else beat you. So for me, the matchup the thing I really want to see, and to be honest, I don't like when we do this a lot, but I'm going to want to see it early tomorrow. I really hope we establish Steve in the post early. One, just because, you know, he's the last couple games, he's been a little bit off. But two, if we can get Carey in any sort of foul trouble, that would be huge, because I think the only big guy they really have coming off the bench is Javon Delorier, and he's more of like a rim runner. Kind of reminds me of like a, we'll say a throwback card, Terrence Farley a little bit. You know,
Terrence Farley.
Yeah, they're all coming out tonight. But I would like to see Steve get established early, see if he can draw some fouls. And the one thing I want to see from Steve, I hope he can catch the ball deeper in the paint. Like, he has post moves that obviously belong in the NBA. They look really good, but I can't stand when he catches the ball so far out. Like, he had a move, I think, in the Notre Dame game where he could have easily just caught the ball, taken a drop step over his left shoulder and laid it in. But instead, he turned over his right shoulder from like the side of the backboard and tried like a over English hook shot that like went off the rim. So you know, I know he can make those. I really just want to see him kind of get deeper, and he might be able to finish more of those that maybe haven't been falling for him. But yeah, I don't know. It's just something that their roster doesn't overly make me nervous compared to past Duke rosters. And I just think our group of kids are going to be ready for the hostile environment that we're going to walk into.
You said a lot of stuff that I agree with, but I can't let you get away with calling Terrence Farley a rim runner. Were you thinking of maybe Terrence Jennings?
Yeah, I mean, Terrence Farley, like towards the end of his career, he would like, you know, a lot of follow up dunks on fast breaks.
Farley are you thinking of?
the NIT? Do you not remember him going off in the NIT? Madison Square Garden. We'll have to look it up, because I swear he had a nice couple game stretch. I know he was a little bit. I think I actually might have played against him in high school, but. That was a humble brag. But anyways,
The only thing that I remember about that run was when we snuck into the Big East tournament that year. I think we were the 11 seed. It was the first year in the conference. We only got in because Tyquan Dean hit that buzzer beater against Notre Dame to send it to overtime, and we won that game. The only thing that I remember about Terrence Farley during that stretch of time was he hit the one free throw when we were down like 26 to nothing to in the Big East tournament.
That was a disaster.
I waited the whole day for that game. It was like the late game. It was like 11 o'clock tip. I'm like, I think we can make a run here. It's like 26 to nothing. And we actually came back and made it kind of interesting. But he hit the free throw because David had gotten, I think it was Padgett, had gotten hurt. And all of our other big men were out. So he had to play. And that was the one thing that I remember about that time. I think you make a good point, too. I like the fact that we're coming into this game after playing in two road venues, especially the last one, playing in Pitt. You and I talked about in the last pod about the Oakland Zoo. It's not, you know, it's not the biggest student section in the entire world, but they're right on top of you, and they're nasty, and they say nasty shit, and it can be really, really intimidating. And I think that's a good thing for them going into Cameron Indoor Stadium, where the students are, they're on top of you like they are at the Peterson Event Center. They're much louder, and there are many more of them, but, like, they're also fucking dorks. Like it's... Yeah. It's not, they're not going to say as mean stuff. It's basically just going to be like a bunch of kids who don't really know the rules of basketball yelling in unison and doing their cheers. Like, it's
what's
more
the
about,
song? What's the song they play? I always like Tears in Heaven, or I forget.
It's that Cascada or whatever.
I mean, it's on every one time of my running. Talk. It's on one of my running playlists. I won't deny it, but yeah, I mean, like, to get you hyped up for a basketball game, that's a little much.
The video, yeah, it's Every Time We Touch by Cascada or Cascada. The video of Grayson Allen coming out to that at their Midnight Madness event or whatever it was a couple of years ago and acting like it was the most badass thing of all time was the...
Oh, God.
I mean, we make fun of Duke a lot, and I say we as like a collective, like the rest of the world besides Duke fans. That was the easiest video to make fun of in the entire world. But anyways, like, I don't think that this Louisville team is going to be overly intimidated by the environment. Like, I don't think if they lose and they lose handily, it's not going to be because of that, because they're in awe of Cameron or whatever. I think it's just going to be because they played poorly and Duke played really well. But as far as if you want to flip it, you mentioned Vernon Carey. I think you make a good point about Stephen Enoch, because Vernon Carey, for as good as he is and as impressive as his numbers are, and he might be the National Player of the Year if the season ended today, he's still not a great defender. He's a good shot blocker. He's a really good shot blocker, but he gambles a lot. And I think he can be exploited. And I think the other thing, I was on Shane Ryan's pod, who does Duke stuff earlier today. And he mentioned, you know, when Vernon Carey's gone up against a really long, really athletic defender, like the Sims kid from Clemson in their last game, he struggled a little bit. Like, his numbers are dramatically lower than when he can just dominate an undersized guy. And I think that this is as much as you would give up a little bit of offense with Stephen Enoch if you take him out of the game, Malik Williams, I think, is the perfect guy to slow down Vernon Carey defensively. Whether or not he does it is on him, but he fits the mold perfectly. Like, Louisville's got a night. I think this is a game where that two-headed monster inside, if it's playing better than it has the last week or so, I think it can be really effective on both ends, both those guys.
Let me ask you a question. And I love Malik, but did he get a new set of legs this year? Like, everything he does around the rim just seems so awkward. Like, the way he falls, he's like on the floor all the time. It just seems like he's like having a hard time working like with his legs. I'm like, all right, Malik. But no, I agree with you. He's like one of our leaders on defense, and Carey definitely struggles with length. Another position I'm looking at is obviously point guard. With Trey Jones, you know, he's definitely, I think, kind of the engine that makes him go. But I like the fact that we're going to be able to throw at least three different guys at him. And again, that's not a position, you know, Trey Jones plays a lot of minutes for them. So hopefully we can wear him down. I want to ask you a question. What's your opinion? And we're about 1.5 years in the MAC era here. What's your opinion of the pack line defense? Are you a fan of it? Is it something that, you know, you wish we would switch up defenses every once in a while? Because I have an opinion, but I kind of want to hear yours.
I think that any defense can work if you have the right pieces in place and everybody gets on the same page. I think this is still, it's still kind of in its infancy as far as the pieces that Mac has to work with aren't the perfect pieces for the pack line. Like, you've got to have big guards for this to really work effectively. Like, I know you don't think of big guards when you think of Virginia, but Ty Jerome was 6'5 last year. Kyle Guy was 6'3 last year. Like, they had the right pieces to play that, and Louisville just doesn't. So I think if he can get the pieces in place, it'll be better. It'll look and Louisville's not a bad defensive team by any stretch, and they weren't a bad defensive team last year either. If you're asking me my preference, it's I loved the style that we had under Rick Pitino, and I hate that this keeps being like a Mac Pitino type thing, but I love that we – every single year would slowly incorporate new defenses to the point where once we got to March, we would play multiple defenses in a single possession. And it fucked everybody up. And I think that that's why Louisville was so difficult to prepare for in March, because you didn't have a set style to go up against. You couldn't just on short rest. If you won on Thursday and we're playing Louisville on Saturday, You couldn't say we're going to use this offense against because they play 2-3. We're going to use this offense because they're playing straight up man-to-man and they're always going to switch on the high ball screen. You had to install like a ton of different things because you never knew what was going to be thrown at you. So, yeah, I think I preferred that a little bit. But that's not to say that this can't work if it's done really well by pieces that fit the system perfectly.
I agree with you. And before the year, I'll be honest, I was a little worried about our defense going into the year because I think towards the end of last year, we kind of, you know, defensively really let down going down the stretch. But I've been pleasantly surprised so far by the defense. The only thing, or kind of the only complaint I have is, and I know last game, I think Pitt had like 16 turnovers, but it seemed like 11 of those were travels. It's just a defense where we're not really going to turn the other team over and create extra possessions for ourselves.
Nope.
And with that, that's the thing I think for us, our offense, I don't know if we are disciplined enough with the ball to be able to play a pack line defense where we don't get those extra possessions because we do turn the ball over and can get a little bit loose with it as well. So I do think when we get the right guys in there, you know, it can work. Obviously Virginia won the title last year with it, so we know it can work. But for me, it is frustrating sometimes because I think we could be a good fast break team, but we just rarely get to see it because, you know, it's hard to get turnovers in the half court. And you know, I do like, here's what I was, the reason I brought that up, I think it was a game in Duke Louisville, like the first year we were in the ACC. I think the teams were pretty even and the game was kind of back and forth. And then I remember right in the middle of the game, Coach K threw a 2-3 zone on us and we went ice cold. And I think we ended up getting run out of the building. And it's something like that, that, you know, I wish we could kind of incorporate in our arsenal, like, hey, you know, if things aren't going our way, it would be nice if we could throw in another defense, just kind of catch the other team off guard and see how they handle it.
It's funny that you use Coach K as an example, because I think the thing that frustrates Duke fans a lot with him is that he never does anything besides play that straight up man to man, except for the last couple of years when he's just had, you know, freshmen that just could not get it. And so he sort of has just kind of, I think, given up and done it a little bit more. Hasn't done it with this group. You're going to see straight man to man from Duke, and they're pretty good at it. They're not the best defensive team in the world, but they're number 5 in KenPom in adjusted defensive efficiency. They're the only team in the country that's in the top 5 in both ADE, adjusted defensive efficiency and adjusted offensive efficiency on KenPom. So it's not really a big weakness, but if you had to pick one or the other, I still think it's probably the defense. But the game you're referring to, I remember it was the wideout. We wore the throwback uniforms, and Duke just threw a zone at us, and we couldn't hit shit. And it was just the most frustrating game in the entire.
God, that was terrible.
It was awful. It was real, real bad. And the crowd was just desperate for any sort of run, and it just never happened. I think what's going to be interesting with this game is I went back and watched a little bit of last year's game, even though it didn't happen. We're never going to talk about it again. It was the worst thing in the entire world. But Louisville, I'd forgotten, we ran like an offense that was basically just a high ball screen last year. Like that was how we started almost every half-court possession. And it got us like wide open three after wide open three after wide open three against Duke. Fast forward to this year, we're hardly using the high ball screen at all. We use it a little bit more against Pitt than we've seen, especially when David Johnson was in the game. But against Duke, they have the 6th best 3-point defense in all of college basketball this year. They've defended the ball really well. They want to force you to beat them off the bounce because they know they have Vernon Carey back there to block shots. They know they've got some good size there. And Louisville, in the ACC play, this is wild, they're shooting a better percentage from 3 right now, 44%, than they are from 2, 42%, which is an outrageous stat. Louisville's got to find a way to get 3-point looks. Like, as much as I love when we can get baskets off the bounce, we haven't been a very good finishing team for most of the year, especially against quality competition. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if Chris Mack kind of brings back some of the offense that we saw a year ago, not just against Duke, but the entire season, to get open looks for guys like Dwayne Sutton, to get open looks for guys like Jordan Warren, do that little butt screen at the top, maybe use him for a pick and pop situation, because like, maybe we can beat Duke if we go, you know, 2 of 10 from 3, if they limit our outside shots, but I don't think we can. I would be surprised. So I'm really curious to see what Mac throws out there offensively. Defensively, if you watch last year's game, we just didn't guard Trey Jones. Like, if you go back and watch, whoever was guarding Trey Jones basically acted as a second help defender. We dared him to shoot. We dared him to do anything. We had no faith in his ability to be an offensive player. he's much better on offense this year, but he's still only shooting, I think, 35.6% from three. He's a good scorer, but he's only a good scorer when he gets to the lane. I wonder if you're going to see Darius Perry or David Johnson or whoever's guarding him sag off him again and make him beat us from the outside, because if you're giving up the outside shot to somebody else, I think that there's a much more likely chance of a guy like Matthew Hurt or like one of the other shooters lighting you up in the perimeter than Trey Jones. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm really interested, especially after last game and how well DJ performed, kind of what the usage is going to be for our guards. I think Fresh, I think since the Kentucky game, he's playing with a lot of confidence. And obviously we saw what DJ can do last game. I think the real nice part about us going into this game as well, God, Jordan is shooting the ball so well right now. If we could just get him going early, it seems like he just kind of engages more in the game. So, you know, the fact that it's a 7-point spread, you know, maybe that's normal. I just really think not only can we cover, I really think, you know, it's going to come down to the end and we got a live shot here, but that remains to be seen. But I have the utmost confidence in this team that we can go in and get a W, and that would be huge going forward.
I'm kind of with you. Like, I don't think I'm quite as confident as you are, but I'll be shocked if this Louisville team, you know, if they look like they did against Florida State, where it's obvious for 40 minutes that they're the inferior team. Oh, like, I'll be surprised if they lose by double digits. I think that they're really going to keep it close, and I think they have a better shot to win this game than a lot of people besides you seem to. I think this is also, this is a big moment for Jordan Wara, because I mean, this is ESPN showcase game. I know that you've got NFL playoffs, but that's not till Sunday. This is kind of like the first Saturday where it feels like the college basketball takeover that's coming after the Super Bowl is sort of setting up. It's a loaded day. A lot of people are watching this game. ESPN's been hyping it up all week long. The only other game this year where there have been eyes like this on Jordan Wara was that Kentucky game, and he was awful. He wasn't very good in the Texas Tech game, which also was nationally televised on ESPN. I think that his numbers are really impressive, but Jordan's very aware of his perception right now, which is that he's a guy who can fill it up against, you know, nobodies and fill it up against the weaker teams in his conference, but who has not been good when the lights have been the brightest so far this year. I hope that doesn't make him press. I hope he steps up to that challenge. He was really good in that Duke game last year until he fell apart in the final minutes like everybody else.
Yeah.
I think that this is a big game for him. This is it's a referendum not just on Jordan Wara, but I think this is a referendum on the entire Louisville team. Like how they fare in this game is kind of going to be how the rest of the country views them until like we get to March, because we don't really have another spotlight game. Like at Florida State's a big deal at the end of February, I should say, but it's Florida State. Like you're not going to get the same level of attention. This is a big time deal. And I think that everybody's kind of curious about Louisville because they've got one decent win over Michigan. It's their only quad one win right now. And in their other big spots, they haven't looked very good. So I think that this is like the takeaway from this game is going to remain the takeaway for the rest of the country. I mean, really, until we do something significant. Is that fair?
Yeah, no. And, you know, just from not that, I mean, we'll have fan interest going to the games regardless, but this is like one of those wins when, you know, if we were to win this game, when we come back home for our next game, you know, the fans, they just have a little more extra juice. Even if we're playing, I mean, I don't even know who we play after this game, to be honest.
Georgia Tech, baby.
Josh Hassner, yeah.
Josh, he's coming March.
Yeah, so shout out Weber there. But, yeah, I just think, you know, it would kind of engage the fan base a little more all the way up until March if we were to win this, because I think from a national level, you know, I know we had a number one ranking at one point, but I think, you know, that would put us right back in the conversation being around, you know, with all the top 10 teams losing the past week or so, you know, there's a golden opportunity for us there tomorrow. And I hope we come out and at least play like we're capable of. I would be really disappointed if we laid an egg.
This is kind of the unspoken thing too, that probably is going to start being talked about a lot more, especially if Louisville loses on Saturday. There aren't a whole lot of opportunities for those quad one wins left on Louisville's schedule because the ACC is so down. And if you look at it right now, our only quad one win is over a Michigan team that lost to Iowa tonight. And that has, you know, I think what have they been since that game against us? They've been 4-5. Like they have, that may not be a quad one win when March rolls around. And so if you're looking at Louisville's schedule, we have no quad one opportunities at home as it stands right now left on our schedule. We got quad one road games against Syracuse, against NC State, against Virginia, and against Florida State and Virginia Tech, I should say. But we have none of those opportunities because if it's a quad one win, it has to be a top 30 team in the net rankings. And that's a little bit concerning if you lose this one, because then you start to press a little bit. And if you're wondering, I think that there's a lot of misconceptions about the net rankings. It matters more who you've beaten than it matters what your actual ranking is yourself. For instance, if you're like the number two team in the net and you've got two quad one wins, it's better to be like the number seven team in the net and have five quad one wins for seeding purposes. Like they care. It's a grouping tool. It's not a ranking tool. The committee cares about how many quad one wins you have, how many quad two wins you have. They don't really care about your own personal net ranking. So Louisville has to start compiling some of this, because right now the profile is a little bit thin. You're 1-3 in those games. This is going to be another opportunity for you. And it's easily the biggest name, and it's easily the best team that you have left on your schedule. I know FSU is a good team. We saw how good they were, and it's a bad matchup for us and all that good stuff. But the computer rankings love Duke right now, and they're going to continue to love Duke through the rest of the season. And I think Duke is honestly better set up for success moving forward. So forget about, you know, ACC titles and rankings and moving back in the top 10 and all that good stuff. This is a big-time game for March, for our Selection Sunday profile. This could be a game that takes Louisville from, like, that four seed range to maybe a two seed. Like, I think it's absolutely that important for our resume.
Yeah. I mean, get your shit together, Boeheim and Tony Bennett. we kind of need you guys to start stepping up so we can have some good games on the schedule. But yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I will definitely be inebriated during the game tomorrow and on pins and needles, but I couldn't agree more that it's a big one, and you know, we'll see what happens.
You mentioned, I think that you're not alone in being sort of upset that Duke is coming off of a loss here. And I know that that seems like an overblown thing, and we're doing it up because we're fans. The stats actually kind of back up that it's not a good deal. Since 2017, Duke is 12-1 in games immediately following a loss, and they're 9-4 against the spread in those games. They're winning those games by an average of 19.8 points per game. So, yeah, I mean, maybe would have been a little bit better if Clemson hadn't been storming the floor Tuesday night.
It's because Coach K takes away all Duke apparel that they have, and basically, I mean, that's the only reason. They're just college athletes without a team name. Whatever mind games Coach K plays, or, you know, I'm sure some of it has to do with the way he's able to work refs. But no, I mean, he's one of the best coaches of all time for a reason, as much as sometimes I absolutely despise the guy. But yeah, I mean, he figures it out. And, you know, although, God, let's see, who did they lose to last year in the Elite Eight? Was it Central Florida? Was it Sweet 16?
No, they lost to Michigan State.
Did they lose to Michigan State? Okay, they beat Dawkins.
They beat
that's
UCF.
Right. Yeah, that's right. All right. Yeah, but I don't know. He usually has them there in the end, so credit to him. But, yeah, definitely coming off a loss, you know, not really the time you want to play him. But it's prime time, and if this isn't a game our team can't get juiced up for, then, you know, they shouldn't be playing.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
All right, we talked a lot about Trey Jones. We talked a lot about Vernon Carey. Those are the two biggest names on this team. I think two other guys that we have to at least mention. Cassius Stanley is a weird matchup for Louisville because he's 6'6", plays on the wing. I think that's probably going to be Dwayne Sutton's guy, and Dwayne Sutton has been fantastic on defense all year, but he's a limited athlete. And Cassius Stanley famously, I think, broke Zion Williamson's vertical leap mark before the start of the year. And if you've watched them play this year, it's pretty apparent that that's not a fluky deal. He's an absurd athlete. That's a tough matchup for Louisville. And then also, I'm curious to see which one of their players gets hot from the outside, because we're probably going to do what we did to them a year ago. We're going to back off Trey Jones. We're going to back off their dribble drivers. We're going to make them beat us from the outside, kind of what we've done with Florida State and Kentucky, who did so effectively. That makes me scared about like Alex O'Connell. It makes me scared about Joey Baker. If he's healthy, if he does play in this game, there hasn't been an update there. I know Jack White was like 1 for $5 billion
Don't you say Jack White. I know. But if he's the one that does this in tomorrow, I might be getting a new TV. It'll just piss me off to no end. But
we know who it's going to be, though. It's going to be Matthew Hurt. I mean, that guy, he is a carbon copy guy of someone who goes for 25 against Louisville. And I'll tell, I told this story on, like I said, on Shane Ryan's podcast, so I'll tell it again here. This was the summer of 2015. I was at a wedding where Rick Pitino was also. Rick had maybe had a couple of vodka tonics. I don't know if he was feeling a little bit loose, but he started talking to me about prospects and recruiting and all this stuff. And he brought up Matthew Hurt, who I think at that time had just finished up his freshman year of high school or was going into his freshman year of high school. He was young. And he said that he was going to be the best white college basketball player since Christian Laettner, was the exact quote, which is why, like, people always give Rick shit for just the absurd hyperbole. That's who he is in real life. Like I don't know him. Like, I'm not the closest person in the world to Rick Pitino in real life or anything like that. But in the little amount of conversations that I've had, he still exaggerates. He still does stuff like that. He gets so caught up in the moment. That's who he is. But that comment from him, I was like, okay. I was like, is this a real thing? And because he's from Minnesota, and he thought, I know Richard had hyped him up, and he said, you know, he thought that we had a really good chance of getting him. He knew Richard couldn't get him at Minnesota. But I was like, this guy's going to be incredible. And then he's been, you know, okay this year.
Yeah, listen, my nickname in college was Captain Exaggerate. So I hold no grudge against anyone that likes to exaggerate. And Rick was around long enough to when you knew, okay, like, he's bullshitting, or he's just kind of in. I think he called Jared Swapshire like Scottie Pippen light at one point. And, you know, we all know the Mike Mara, best shooter ever come through Louisville. So, I mean, you know, take it for what it is. But yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I'm looking kind of right now, and yeah, if this was the guy that put up 25 again, God, just something about Duke players are just, they're so easy to hate. Like, I mean, I have no ill will against this guy, but I know by the end of tomorrow, I'm gonna be like, God, fuck this kid. But yeah, you know, one of those guys, whether it's O'Connell, White, or Hurt, one of these guys might get hot from the outside. But, you know, we've been playing good defense, so we just got to stick with it.
Is the Mike Mara being the greatest high school shooter he's ever seen? I don't know how, like, why did Louisville fans, myself included, settle on that as, like, the one quote that we always use as the generic example for Rick Pitino's exaggeration, for his hyperbole? Like, there were a billion over the years, but for some reason, that one stuck with everybody. Like, my favorite one of all time, and I wrote a whole this is a chapter in the book that I wrote, was his exaggerations about the first round opponents in the NCAA tournament. And I honestly don't think that he knew what he was doing. Like, I don't think that he was, it was a joke. But if you go back, and I did this for the book, almost, I think, with the exception of, like, twice when we played 16 seeds, every time Louisville had the press conference after the NCAA tournament draw came out, Pitino referred to our first round opponent as the toughest first round opponent that I faced in my blank years of coaching every fucking time. Like, Louisiana Lafayette in the 05 run, Stanford when we beat them by like 50 points, Boise State in 08, like all these teams, he said the exact same thing every time. And then when I finally, I think, wrote the thing, he stopped doing it the last 2 or 3 years. I don't think that the two were maybe related, but it was just kind of funny how it worked out. Like, but the Mara, for whatever reason, that quote just seemed to catch everybody's attention. All right, are you ready for trivia time?
I'm actually very nervous. And next pod, we're gonna reverse this, and I'm gonna try to stump you, as impossible as that may be. But okay. Yeah, go ahead, lay it on me.
All right, Duke has won with their last win at Cameron Indoor. It was the 900th game that they've won at Cameron Indoor Stadium. That's the most of any team in college basketball when it comes to their current home venue. Can you name, and I'll give you four guesses, can you name two of the other top five teams in this category, teams that have won the most games at the home venue where they currently play?
Kansas.
Kansas at Allen Fieldhouse is number four. That's correct.
Let's see. God, they're home. Oh, man. UCLA.
UCLA at number five is correct. Pauley Pavilion. You're 2 for 2. I'll say this. Those two, I think, were the ones that you had a chance of getting. Numbers 2 and 3 are very, very difficult.
Gosh, someone like the St. Joe's at the Palisera or something like that.
I'm going to give you partial credit for that because the correct answer is Penn. You're talking about the Palestra.
Yeah.
That's actually number two on the list. Okay. So you're 2.5 for 3. Can you, okay. Do you care to guess what number three on this list is? And this to me is a stunner.
Oh my God. Jeez. Tennessee.
That's a good guess. You're actually really, really close. How about this?
Go ahead.
The Vanderbilt Commodores at Memorial Gym.
Okay.
Number three. It's those funky benches.
Yeah. No, I was trying to think of like gyms that may have been around a while. Yeah. And so what? We got one left?
No. That was it.
That was it? Okay.
Yeah,
sorry.
You did well. That was good. That was good. You mentioned how much that like everybody hates Duke players, and so I don't want to do the thing where it's like who's your least favorite Duke player because everybody says the exact same thing. It's like it's all the white guys and then Shane Battier. Like he's the reverse Rooney Rule of Duke hate. Like everybody feels bad that they only say white guys. So they're like who's somebody else? They're like oh yeah Shane Battier. Fuck him. Like he's in there too. So I don't want to do that. Who are your three favorite Duke players of all time? If you had three Dukies that you liked over the years, who were they?
Okay. Number three, I love formerly Jason Williams, now Jay Williams. He was so fucking good for them. Like
he was incredible. He's always my answer when people say, like, who's the best college basketball player of your lifetime? That's who I always
think. His game at Maryland was one of the single-handedly best college basketball performances I've ever seen when they were down, I think, like 9 or 10 with under a minute left, and he basically just willed them to victory and scored all the points. So he's up there. Number two, God, this one was tough. You're probably going to be like, oh, my God. I don't know why. I just like this guy's game. I was a Mike Dunleavy guy.
I respect that.
Yeah, I like Dunleavy. I liked his game. I think he was on the team that beat Arizona in the national title game early 2000. So I liked him. And then one of my favorites, the Alaskan assassin, Trajan Langdon. My God, that guy could pull up from anywhere. He was absolutely deadly. I absolutely loved his game. He was awesome. So what about you?
I've got Trajan Langdon on my list too. I thought he was awesome. I loved that 98-99 Duke team that lost to Connecticut in the national title. Corey Maggette was not my favorite. He's not on my list, but William Avery is. I love Avery. And he was the first Duke player to go pro early. I think or he was like the most infamous Duke player that went early because Coach K after that game was like, no, he'll be back and all this shit. And he was a sophomore. And William Avery was like, you paid me to come here. So fuck you. I don't have to do anything. I got the dirt on you. I'm gone. The whole Myron Piggy stuff was going on back there in the late 90s. But I loved him at Duke. So those are my first two. And then this is generic, but I mean, how can you not say Zion Williamson? I mean, he was.
Yeah.
I've never had more fun watching a non-Louisville player. Like he was just can't miss TV all last year. I thought he handled everything really well. He seemed like an easy kid to root for. It became the year of Zion. I know people got annoyed by it, but my God, I mean, how can you not watch a cinder block bitten by a radioactive spider playing basketball? Like that dude was fucking unreal. So those are my three there. But I liked I'm with you on Dunleavy. Like he was kind of fun. He wasn't like Josh McRoberts. Kind of annoying,
oh, God,
Duke, big Duke white
him.
Guy.
Jeez.
He was fun, Duke white guy. I was a fan.
Now, is there a player who's hateable for Duke that you're like, you know what? I actually probably don't hate him as much as the rest of the country does.
Like right now?
No, like in the past maybe like 20, 25 years.
I loved watching JJ Redick play.
That's my answer. I was a big Redick guy. Like I think he had so much swag when he stepped on the court, and like I just thought he was a baller. But yeah, I mean, dude, I know a lot of people can't stand him, but he was so good.
JJ didn't help himself though. Like the whole I'm gonna respond to people not liking me by going on national TV and talking about how I write poetry in dark basketball gyms.
That was weird. Like, yeah.
That was
I liked him on the court. We'll keep it that. I liked him on the court.
I mean, you wanna talk about misjudging a room. Like JJ Redick is like, I know how I'm gonna get all these fat, like overweight dudes who like only watch sports and who hate me. I know how I'm gonna get them on my side. There's one way to their hearts, and it's poetry. Like, that was just the biggest miscalculation of all time. It just made everybody hate him 10 times more. But he's actually become like a really likable dude in the NBA too. And I think I know he's got a successful podcast. He just seems like a laid back kind of fun guy that you would like to hang out with. So I'm cool with JJ Redick. And how can you not like a dude who's just throwing up threes on every single possession? He was really, really fun to watch.
Yeah, I agree. 100%.
All right. Final thoughts. 6 o'clock. This is we've broken it down. This is a monster game for Louisville. You're clearly confident about the game. Do you want to give me a final score?
I didn't even look at like KenPom or like what the over under is. So I'm like taking a shot here. I'll say, God, I'm like, if the Cards get blown out, this is going to look so bad. I have faith. I'll say Cards 72, Duke 69.
I like that. I think that I think it's going to be a higher scoring game. I know Louisville's offense has been a little bit spurty. I think that they can take advantage of this Duke team. I think it's going to be really close. I really want to pick Louisville here. I'm going to go against my better interests, and I'm going to say that Duke wins the game. I'll say
Jesus,
70.
Traitor. Oh, my God.
I know. I hate it. I'm going to say 79-77. I think it's going to be – like, I'll be shocked if this isn't a really good game. That's kind of where I stand. So I hate to do it, but would love to be wrong. Would love to be having a podcast here on Monday where we're just celebrating and laughing at how wrong I was. But it's a Duke team that, like we said, they're pissed off. The numbers are good just across the board. They've become a solid defensive team. They take away kind of what we do well on offense. But the thing that I do like is – Chris Mack had a unique game plan for them a year ago. He had a unique game plan for the Kentucky game this year. If you didn't hear us talk about that, like, he had 10 days to prepare, and he ran a couple of sets. I think this chin continuity action that we hadn't run at any point since he'd been here. I think he didn't even run it at Xavier, and we scored on 8 of the 13 possessions there. I wouldn't be shocked at all if he's got like a special wrinkle for this Duke game that we haven't seen just yet, especially since we played Pitt on Tuesday, a team that we'd already played early in the year and didn't really have to scout. So I kind of trust Mac's ability to game plan for something like this, because we saw how well he did it last year. It wasn't really his fault that everything just went to shit in the last, 5 minutes of the second half. I mean, is that a safe reason to feel semi-confident about this game?
Yeah, and here's one request I have for the game. If we have a late lead and we're taking the ball out on the press, I love Ryan. I mean, I think he's great. He's played really good defense this year. Can we not put Ryan on the press break? Like, we can put David in, we can put Fresh in. I can't stand when we throw the ball into Ryan, and I love the kid, but sometimes if he gets some pressure, he gets a little weak with the ball, and I just don't trust him, dribbling or making passes in the backcourt. So that's my one request for Chris. I know he's a good free throw shooter, but let's on the press break, if it comes down to that, let's go with some other options there.
By the way, my wife's favorite thing about this podcast so far is how you just refer to Chris Mack as Chris. She thinks it's hilarious that you just like casually talk about him as if you like are gonna text him right after you
I
get
feel
off the
weird
pod.
Saying like Chris Mack. I don't know. we're just gonna go with Chris, all right? Yeah.
What up, Chris? In all seriousness, I think you're totally right. We talked after the Notre Dame game about how there are Ryan games and non-Ryan games. I feel like this is a non-Ryan game. I actually feel like Darius Perry and Fresh Kimball can both play in this game, because Trey Jones, for as good as he is, he's 6'3", and that's, a generous 6'3". I don't think that he's overly intimidating for either one of them. I do think he's a weird matchup for David Johnson, who's a little bit looser with the ball. I mean, Trey Jones is going to try to pick pockets. He's one of the best left guys in the entire country. But I think the other two guards, like, I wouldn't be shocked at all if Darius Perry and Fresh Kimball both have the same type of game that they had against Kentucky. I think they can play in this game. Ryan McMahon, it's a little bit – I mean, it's a team that defends the three really well. There's no other way around it. You have something else?
The last thing I was going to say, how much anxiety are you going to have if, like, we're up, like, 11 with 5 minutes left and they throw a press on us? I know the team is different this year than last year. Last year, they had athletes all over the court and we're just basically taking the ball right out of our hands. But if we're up like 10 or 11 and they throw a press on us, I'm probably going to watch the game with a blanket over my face, because I won't be able to handle us watching them break the press.
If we're up 20 with like 3 minutes to go, then I'm going to have anxiety. It's like, it's like the Lamar Jackson Florida State year, because Florida State had come back on us so many times that even when that game was like 52-14, there were people who were like, hold on, like easy guys, like everybody hold up. It wasn't until like we were literally up 75 on them and the fans were getting ready to storm the field that everybody exhaled. I think it's going to be the same type of situation, especially if Duke does bust out the press. But we've handled that stuff better this year. I mean, Chris,
Mack, I agree.
Mack talked about it. Like, we've handled pressure. We didn't handle it great when it came to scoring against Florida State, but we have held onto the ball a lot better in those situations this year. I think we're a much better team, a much more prepared team to handle stuff like that. All right, we mentioned you can find the podcast now anywhere. If you have the opportunity, please give us 5 stars. Please give us a nice review. And if you want a little bit of encouragement to do so, we're going to read some of the reviews that you guys have been leaving just to try and get you to go and do that for us. Good Time Charlie 80, my guy Good Time Charlie, says, Mike says beautiful Hooters in episode 3. This podcast is a certified good time. I don't remember saying that, but I'm sure I did. Shout out to the Jeffersonville Hooters. It's where all culture and art and everything good in this community happens. Let's see. I don't want to read that one. I want to read one that actually mentions you, because there are some good Dumpster Dan stuff.
So like, keep scrolling. Gotta go a while. Keep scrolling.
Let's see. The thing was, we had like the one from like the Tammy Mama person or whatever, and some guy tweeted me tonight. Paul, shout out to Paul. I don't have your. I think it was Paul Stevens, maybe. I hope that's right. He was like, I don't know how that became my name on the podcast, but it was me who left that comment. Tappin' Mommy was the actual name on Spotify, but it really wasn't. Let's see. Karen says, I'm all in on cussing Mike Rutherford. Shout out to you. There's some Dumpster Dan references. I don't really want to get there. Let's see. C Pride says, about time you started a podcast, Mike. It'll be a hit. Great stuff. All this good stuff is happening. Let's see. Oh, here's the one I was looking for. RSW_card says, about time Rutherford got his own pod. Dan is insightful / knowledgeable as well. Basically, it's like listening into a bullshit session with your boys. Great stuff. That's kind of what we're going for here.
100%. Yeah. I mean, this is what we do, you know, when we go out on the weekends and just talk cards basketball. So it's great to be able to give this to all the listeners and kind of fill them in on, you know, how we talk.
All right. Shout out to everybody for listening in to Card Chronicle Podcast Episode 5. I think I said, did I say 4 at the beginning? Whatever. We're doing so much. We've gotten so big that we can't even remember how many episodes there are. But we will have a reaction episode, win or lose, for you guys that should be available on Monday morning. In the meantime, enjoy the game tonight. Enjoy the lead up. Kill some time, hopefully listening to this podcast. And go Cards. Beat Duke.
Go Cards, baby.